It's time for Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Spring Training Edition. This is the week. Pitchers and catchers report. Everyone loves that phrase. I'm personally tired of it. I'm just giving you actual games, and we'll worry about who's reporting later. But it's fine. Baseball is in the air. It's a mild February in Milwaukee on top of it. So we are going to discuss it as spring training is about to get underway. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Microbrew Brewers podcast. And joining me here in the studio is Kurt Hogue, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He will be going down to Phoenix, Arizona to watch the Brewers at the Merrivale Spring Training Complex, but not right away. Initially, it'll be our colleague Todd Rosiak getting down there. So we're going to have both gentlemen on here over the course of the next few weeks as we get you prepared for the baseball season. Does not start officially until March 30th. That is a game at Wrigley Field. They'll be back a few days after that, 3 days after that, for the home opener April 3rd against the New York Mets. Kurt, how have things been lately, man? How are you doing? How was the Super Bowl for you?
The Super Bowl was a football game that I watched. Yeah. It was entertaining. Yes, it was. I had some good food, some good drinks, and
you had a standard Super Bowl experience.
And notably, pitchers and catchers, and not Kurt Hogue report.
That's true. You get to take the first half of this.
Three weeks left here.
A little easy, yeah. Which is nice, but there will certainly be storylines to watch both now and later. Todd Rosiak summarized quite a bit about the five big things. They're kind of obvious things. I would say the things that people are paying attention to as the offseason has progressed and now into the regular season. But I would encourage you to check that out. It very nicely summarizes all the things that the Brewers fans are looking forward to. That's where we'll start, Kurt. As camp breaks here, no, camp is not breaking. As camp starts here, what are like one or two really main things that are either questions we need answered or things that you just are really keeping an eye on that might dictate how this Brewers team can be in 2023?
Do we get a press conference about Hank the dog again this year? That's number one.
So you're saying if we have a Hank presser, what does that indicate that we are?
What year did they have that? Was that 2016?
Earlier than that.
That was not a good year for Brewers. 2015 maybe.
Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah, that
it's
was
not a good time. Omen. It's like the groundhog.
Yeah. When we start going a little bit off. The focus gets off the players.
When the spring training storyline is about anything but baseball.
I think there are enough elite players on this team where that doesn't have to happen, at least not yet, including especially the pitching staff, but I don't know.
I think for my actual non-Hank edition storyline, it is about those elite pitchers and how healthy they stay.
For sure.
It feels like if the Brewers get 29, 30 starts plus out of the top three guys, and then I guess you could probably throw Eric Lauer in that conversation as well. If three out of four of those guys are healthy all year, pretty much, you really like this team's chances because they've proven what they can do. There's no reason to think that they can't be as good as they have been in previous years, maybe even better in some cases. But as we saw last year, it's always a big question. Now there's already some questions with Aaron Ashby. Looking like he's gonna miss some time, and who knows what his role will be. Freddie Peralta, you know, with some of the guys, there's now a little bit more of a track record, I guess, is what I'm alluding to here. Freddie Peralta, you know, really never got going last year because of the injuries. Corbin Burnes has you know, you can knock on wood here, stayed healthy. Brandon Woodruff, for the most part, has been healthy except for when he stopped being able to feel his fingers last year.
Yeah. It is very easy to forget that Woodruff missed such a huge chunk of the season last year and Freddie Peralta missed more of it, you know, and that was certainly a big reason why they ultimately end up missing the playoffs by, what was it, a game or two games?
One game, yeah.
Well, yeah, so those are certainly shoulda, woulda, coulda, wouldas. I think most teams expect their rotation will have some hangups over the course of the year, and that's where the depth comes in. The Brewers' depth, I would say, probably couldn't quite match that last year.
It's better now, yeah.
It is better.
It's a little better.
I think Wade Miley is probably one of the places you look there because you mentioned Aaron Ashby. This is, I think, pretty concerning. Aaron Ashby did have some sort of arm issues last year off and on. He went on the injured list a couple times. You could probably have chalked it up at the time to, well, you know, you're bringing him along. You're just not taking any risks at all. He's a guy whose role is a little bit undefined, but I think in the long-term scheme of things, the Brewers see him as a dominant left-hander, whether that means he is a dominant left-handed starter, I think, or just, you know, a hybrid bullpen type or even a closer high-leverage reliever. I guess I don't know for sure what the future holds for him, but either way, he's one of their big guns in the future. And now he's going to be way behind the eight ball. They don't expect him to be ready, of course, for spring training. It sure sounds like it could be, you know, midway through the year before you really see Aaron Ashby pitching meaningful innings. I don't know if maybe that's pessimistic or maybe even it's optimistic. I'm not sure. But certainly that was not news Brewers fans wanted to hear. It feels very much like, okay, back to 2022 when guys were, you know, were behind because of injuries and never really caught up.
Yeah, this is a tricky one because it's tough to put a timeline on this sort of injury. It's not like a, I don't know, like a broken ankle or, you know, it's sort of ambiguous as to when he'll be able to just, you know, feel better and be able to ramp back up and how long that ramp up takes, we don't know. The one thing I will say with it is maybe it ends up working out in a weird way for the Brewers in which, you know, Ashby has to just slot it into the bullpen, you know, as whenever he comes along, and that might be where he's best right now. I do think he can start now with all the injuries. Maybe there's some, I don't know, some workload concerns there as well. And the delivery is also high effort. I'll add that into it. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it as well. But if he's in the bullpen, that's probably where he's best right now. He can just be absolutely nasty. We saw it in the kind of multi-inning stints early last year before he had to start full-time. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's like you said, probably we're not going to see him as a starter because you can't imagine that he would come back after a multi-month absence and be the type of guy that you rely on coming out of the gate. So I'm guessing we see him as pretty much solely a reliever in 2023 if we do get to see him for an extended period of time. So now again, they have to consult the depth here to start with. I guess my other concern, my big concern, is the outfield. I don't even know what to expect. I mean, we don't really even know for sure what role they expect Jesse Winker to play. At this point, I think you have to assume he's going to be in the outfield where he has struggled defensively. Christian Yelich has struggled defensively, although Gold Glove finalist Christian Yelich has struggled defensively.
That's right.
I have to point
out. Put some respect on that name.
Former Gold Glove winner, Gold Glove finalist. You know, in center field, is it Garrett Mitchell? Is it Tyrone Taylor? Like, are we sleeping on Tyrone Taylor's chances of being a guy? But either way, they don't have a lot of, like, clear-cut.
They just don't have a lot of outfielders.
Right. They don't even have bodies at this point, let alone clear-cut options.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me. That's a concern.
I think with some of Winker's health concerns, they're not going to want to put him out there regularly, at least early in the season, which gives you – I mean, I guess Brian Anderson is outfield capable.
Mm-hmm.
So that signing is big in that regard. But that pretty much gives you three guys that are regular outfielders with Taylor and Mitchell. Because we've talked about it on the pod, and this is Self-Relic said it himself at the Brewers warm-up. He's not expecting to be on the opening day roster.
Yeah.
It's kind of written, I mean, I feel like it was kind of, you could see it coming, not being on the 40-man roster. They called it Mitchell before him anyway. But, yeah, there's not a lot of guys. Blake Perkins will be up at some point, I'm sure, just because they don't have a ton of depth there. But we'll see how the outfield picture looks in 3 months. I mean, we kind of have an idea for how it's going to look now, but yeah, I mean, maybe Winker's playing out there regularly by June, and someone's going to take the center field job. We don't know who.
Keston Hira, you are an outfielder.
I will go on the record as Keston Hira's best position is left field.
Yes.
Which, I don't know if I've said that on this podcast.
You have
before.
many times, Kurt. Okay. You have repeated it constantly. It is a thing that you believe in. And then,
but he has like the worst arm in baseball.
And like we said,
according to StatCast,
if your left fielder is Christian Yelich's arm, I think he'd probably admit not a strong suit. So like either way,
there's a reason that left field is where the worst arms go.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting, and it kind of leads me into my next question: do we think they're done with their roster tinkering? Because last year, they still had not signed Andrew McCutchen. The year before that, they had not signed Jackie Bradley Jr. I don't know if there's really anybody that they would sign. There's possibly you could see, I guess, a trade happening, but I don't know if that high level, you know, like major players end up traded at this point in the season. But do you see this roster as a finished product at this point?
I think they'll sign someone. I'm not sure if it'll be a big league deal per se.
Yeah,
there's just enough guys out there that are still. Like, there's guys out there that are starters, right, you know, on a big league roster. Like, Jerickson Profar hasn't been signed yet. But then there's a whole nother litany of dudes who are, like, you know, borderline MLB contract guys. And obviously, I'm assuming all these guys are holding out, and there's still some good deals coming down. Andrew Chafin just got like $6 million. David Peralta got a nice little deal too. So
yeah,
so these guys are probably going to keep holding out for a little bit, but there's just so many of them, and then the Brewers have enough spots where they could still maybe fill in, not on the 40-man necessarily, but yeah, they'll sign someone. They'll add a body.
Well, how about Jerickson Profar? I mean, he's 29 years old. He's not even 30 yet. The guy, you know, right-handed bat. I don't know, but like that's. Is that a possibility, do you reckon, or not so much?
This is the part of the season. My gut says no, but this is the part of the season where the Brewers go get guys like that when it just becomes a good enough bargain. I just don't really know how well he fits. Like, it feels like the position player group is pretty well set, and they have guys kind of for every role.
Yeah.
But...
he is versatile, but like you said, like, to kind of have those guys.
This is when they, guys like that, that are still kind of just hanging around, the Brewers sometimes reach in and pluck them.
Yeah. Profar does turn 30 literally February 20th. So like it's only a few more days of his 20s. But that'll be interesting. Did you want to do some predictions? Because we could go there. But you know what? Actually, first, I have one more thing. I think we can call him our friend, Jonathan Judge, at Baseball Prospectus. He has just a ton of interesting stuff, has done a lot of great work with stats and whatnot. He presented something for Baseball Prospectus that looked at a different way of looking at defensive range. And specifically, he looked at the shortstops in Major League Baseball and sort of calculated, you know, using sort of the idea of what balls they're able to get to, what balls they, you know, if they cleanly play the ones they do get to, pulled in a bunch of different sort of metrics there, and came away with a calculation that showed Willy Adames as the best defensive shortstop out there, better than Trey Turner, you know, better than Dansby Swanson, and that was interesting to me. I know he's a good defender, and this metric, again, he does a lot of really good work. I really trust his work, and I really think that if he is calculating something that shows that Willy Adames is the best at something, I believe that to be true. And that's going to be all the more valuable this year with the way shifting is working. We're not going to see players shifting. They're going to have a couple fielders on each side of second base. There's more value in having a rangy shortstop. And we talked last week about, you know, are we sure that the Brewers should be in the market for extending Willy Adames? Offensively, he's a little bit enigmatic, but still pretty solid as shortstops go, especially. And if defensively he's about as good as it gets, man, now you got to really... they really got to work to extend him, you know? Like, I am more convinced of that than I maybe ever have been. Tell me what you did you read that? Did you get a sense of kind of what the methodology was? And I don't know. What do you make of it?
Yeah, Willy, I mean, it kind of matches what you see, I think, to a large degree, which I don't know if it's just that's, you know, a little confirmation bias, but it definitely makes sense. Willy Adames is a really, really good defensive shortstop. We already knew about his arm, one of the best throwing arms of a shortstop, but like those strides, he takes really long strides and can cover a lot of ground to get to the ball. I guess you could look at the extension thing through either lens. It just gives him more leverage and, like, I don't know, more value, but kind of, you know, puts him up another notch, and he's 2 years away from free agency where he would make a lot of money, maybe even more now. So
yeah. All right. We did get a bobblehead. The all-fan bobblehead giveaway release was Monday. The Brewers announced that they will be making Rowdy Tellez, Devin Williams, and William Contreras bobbleheads this year for all-fan giveaways. They have several that are lined up for theme nights, including Yuke Skywalker for
that's a good one.
Star Wars night. That is a really good one. I think Craig Council, I think, is on Indiana Jones night. They've got a Cookie Monster thing going on, Cookie Monster bobblehead on Sesame Street night. Those are cool, but the all-fan ones, I think, are the ones people really are interested in. And they picked three good ones. I mean, Willy Adames was featured last year, so was Burns, Woodruff, Peralta. So, like, these are some of the best current players left. And, you know, reminds me that William Contreras, he might be their best player this year. Like, you would have to hope that last season is what's real there. We've talked about this before, but, like, you know, there isn't a ton of track record before last season. But holy smokes, if last season, I mean, he has an 860 OPS. Rowdy Tellez is the highest returning offensive OPS, and it's 767. Like, he is a full 100 points better last year as offensive players go. So so obviously you hope the Brewers offense in general doesn't have those numbers across the board, but that could be he's certainly going to be interesting. All right, predictions. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, was that your prediction there? Did you sneak one in there? William Contreras is their best offensive player?
Oh, no.
That wasn't one?
Okay. No, I don't think so. I mean, we'll see if I can drum up a few as we're talking here.
I do need to know who you have to say then who you think their best offensive player is going to be.
That is a good question that I need to ponder before I throw in my two cents. So we'll start with predictions. We'll see where it goes because I know we've talked about some of this stuff on the last few podcasts anyway. Okay. Some of this isn't completely new, but you know, most of it is. The season's about to roughly get underway here with the arrival of pitchers and catchers at spring training. So give me your thoughts. Give me your predictions, Kurt.
Numero uno. There's no B.
There's no
in
B.
Numero. Yeah, I should know that.
That's okay.
Brandon Woodruff is going to win the Cy Young Award.
Whoa! I didn't think you were going to go that far.
Okay. Well, I maybe conflated it a little bit with like we got to have some spice.
Yeah. So I
do think he's going to be top three, though. That's probably the take.
I have said this in the past where I thought, as good as Corbin is, I think Brandon Woodruff might actually like get more Cy Young votes or something. And it's never actually worked out that way. But I think the one thing that was standing in his way last year was health. You know, if he plays that whole season, does he win Cy Young? He does not. Does he get a lot of votes? He does. I mean, he was money for them again last year. Really, really good down the stretch. And, you know, you wrote about how he's their best big game pitcher ever, right? Like in Brewers history.
Yeah, I mean, since 2019, I don't have the leaderboard in front of me or anything, but he's probably like a top five starter in the National League for sure.
I think that's absolutely
right. For sure,
right.
Since 2019.
Yeah.
Maybe even higher. So the fact that a guy can be that good for that long, and has he gotten Cy Young votes?
Oh, he
probably did
Cy
in 2021
votes.
For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he did the year that Corbin won, but... Yeah.
But he's never been top five, I don't think.
He might have actually been fifth that year because I remember thinking, oh, man, it was as good as Corbin was. They were able to slide in a few more votes. I'll figure that out here in a second. But he's definitely somebody who could see him winning a Cy Young. It wouldn't be that far afield. He was 13-4 last year with a 3.05 ERA. So, so good. He did, in fact, take fifth that year in 2021.
Okay, he did take fifth.
He had 21 overall points. Corbin won 151. Zach Wheeler, 141. You forget how close that
was.
It was
very close. Very, very
yeah,
close.
Yeah, it was a sort of a... The methodology was about innings pitched that Corbin Burns didn't have a lot of them, and the concern was, you know, need to work more, and he did. He worked a lot more last year.
He threw 200 innings.
He did indeed.
That's
so.
Why I put him on mine, so I got the last spot on my ballot, because he threw 200 innings.
Right. And
I was very glad that first-time voter, Sandy Alcantara, that was...
Yes.
So, I didn't want to sweat it out. I was very, very pleased that Sandy was doing Sandy things.
Yes. So behind the curtain a little bit, the Baseball Writers Association of America has a voter for every award in every market, right? And you were a first-time member of the BBWAA last year.
That's right.
And so you were given the task of choosing the NL Cy Young. You were representing the Milwaukee market. And like you said, it was a slam dunk. Like, there's no doubt who was going to win. But people get torn apart for their opinions when it's a contentious vote. You know, I could have seen that Corbin Burns, Zach Wheeler, you know, that sort of situation a couple of years ago would have been very contentious. And you've really got to pour over it to make sure you can justify your pick. But no problem, Sandy Alcantara. Open and closed, shut case there. So what is my first prediction? You know, you asked who I think their best offensive player will be. I still don't know if I have a good answer. I still don't feel like they have that person. I mean, who was the best offensive player last year? That's a really difficult thing to ask because Willy Adames was very good. Hunter Renfroe is probably the answer, but Hunter Renfroe had holes in his game and was, you know, he was hurt a couple times. Like, I don't mean numbers wise, he was it, but he wasn't markedly better than, you know, you had Rowdy Tellez hitting 35 home runs,
yeah,
but he also
Renfroe
had
missed
holes
some
in his
time
game
too.
Yeah, so
Willie missed some time.
This is how they've been based for a while, where they've, you know, they haven't necessarily. I think they thought Christian Yelich, of course, when he signed the extension, he would be the star, and everybody else would be just kind of, you know, a little above average across the board, and that's kind of how they were built. It fell apart a little bit only partially, because Yelich wasn't able to maintain that level. I think Christian Yelich is going to be their best player this
Ooh,
year.
Ooh, welcome.
I think Christian
welcome
Yelich.
Welcome to this side.
You know, you have talked me into this a little
train.
Bit. I wish that I could give you a methodology or some statistical support.
It's vibes.
I think it's just purely vibes.
It's vibes, yeah.
I, you know.
He was better last year.
Yeah, he was good last year. Not great, but he was good.
There's still those tiny little flashes.
Oh, when he homered in Denver. When he hit it to the moon.
Yeah, he's still hitting the ball. I mean, the underlying metrics are still really good. It's just, can you hit the ball not on the ground all the time?
And Do I think the shift is going to dramatically improve his case?
No.
I don't. I think that's going to be overstated for just about everybody.
Yep.
But I also don't think it's going to necessarily hurt. There's a little bit of artistry with where he's putting the ball, but it's just always on the ground. And consequently, it just isn't high percentage. So
yeah, I think he pulled all the fly balls that were categorized as pulled by him last year were home runs.
Yeah.
And going back two years, almost all of them have been home runs. He's just not pulling the ball in the air, but he is pulling the ball.
He is one of the most confounding offensive profiles that the Brewers have ever had. And you've got to imagine there is something there that is just something changed irreparably when he hurt his knee during the late stages of September the 2019 season that he hasn't gotten back. But because you see the flashes, you know it's capable. Like, it's not out of the question that he can mash home runs, that he can put the ball in the air, and he can really drive the ball. We just don't see it consistently. Like, maybe this is it. Maybe it just took this long to get back to whatever he needed to do. But again, it's vibes.
Yeah, that's the vibe right there. That's what you're feeling right there.
You have to acknowledge it's probably nonsense, but
he's just got to put the ball in. I mean, it feels like an oversimplification, but if you just turn – I don't know, X percent of those grounders into fly balls.
Yeah.
The whole profile changes dramatically. Now, that's far easier said than done. I have never hit a ground ball nor a fly ball
in Major League pitching. Yeah.
So I don't know how you'd switch, you know, what does one do?
Did you ever face anyone in high school that got close to the majors?
I believe I faced, I didn't face Alex McRae from Eisenhower.
That was Major League pitching.
I was riding the pine though. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Brown Deer. We did not win that game.
No. Alex McRae, very, very good in high school. He was our All Suburban Player of the Year. For when community newspapers was more of a thing, and he has made appearances in the big leagues with the Pirates. I want to say some other team, but
I
want to
say
sure.
He's in KBO now, maybe, or something. He might be overseas now.
He struggled in the big leagues. It did not work out, but he was definitely in the big
leagues. He made it to the big leagues.
Pitched against the Brewers.
I think there was a Tosa West kid that got drafted in like 14.
Austin Jones?
I think
Austin
so, yeah.
Jones.
He was also in our conference. He did not pitch against us, but we did play them.
Yeah, so. He was money. He was also, I think, an All-Suburban Player of the Year for us as well. But not a ton of Milwaukee representation at the upper levels, but more and more, obviously, with Jared Kelenic and Gavin Lux leading the way, we've seen more of that. Owen Miller, who's now with the Milwaukee Brewers, made it, of course, with the Cleveland Guardians. He's now a Major League veteran. And Danny Jansen with the Toronto Blue Jays, who's not from the Milwaukee area, but he's from Appleton. So we keep an eye on him. And there's a few others. There's Jonathan Stever of Cedarburg has pitched for the White Sox. He's been battling some injuries the last couple of years, but talked to him during the pandemic season when he was able to make his big league debut. Very tough, strange circumstances for that. But yeah, there is a host of Wisconsin products that are in Major League Baseball. Sorry, we got diverted a little bit from
that. That's
okay.
Once we start talking preps. Do you want to just turn this into a preps?
We should. Yeah, I love talking preps. I have
and
to admit,
everyone
though,
just turned it off.
Well, yes. Also, it's just I'm just not good at it anymore. Like, I went to a high school. I've been to a couple high school basketball games for various functions lately. And I just don't, you know, I look stuff up and like, oh, this player, I was at a girls basketball game because my daughter was in this cheer camp and it was Racine Prairie against Martin Luther. This was at Martin Luther High School.
Racine Prairie has
a sophomore who got a D1 offer before she even set mm-hmm. foot on the court. And I confess, I didn't know her name. And I mean, if I were back in the preps writing, I would have known that, you know, I would have known it over and over. I would have seen her play a couple times, but you know, I didn't know her name. It was like, wow, she is really good. So, you know, I get to Google it out. It's like,
she can go wherever she wants.
Yeah, like, no, she's really good. Really like good, it is not just me who has noticed that she is very, very good. So I feel like a sham when I come out there and I just like can't tell you the names of the players anymore. But you know, it was a good time while it lasted. My preps career.
Yeah, you're a preps has been. It's cool.
It's true. Yeah,
I'm about to be.
Yeah,
I still got enough skin in the game.
You realize very quickly how it only takes 4 years for a complete turnover in everyone.
It's gonna hurt me deeply.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's get out of here. Well, let's talk more predictions. More predictions. What do we got?
More predictions. Joey Weimer is going to end up being the best prospect out of this current crop.
Interesting, interesting.
Multi-time All-Star.
And that ties into your prospect series.
I guess,
you did.
Yeah, we can tie that in. Yeah, sure.
At JS
plug.
Online. You did a lot of sort of individual prospect outlooks and then sort of a broader take and looking at some of the guys who could maybe be the next Jackson Chourio, for example, the surprise prospect that we weren't talking about a year ago who suddenly becomes one of the top guys, maybe not top five in all of baseball, but certainly somebody that we would be talking about this time next year. You looked at some of those names. You dove into Chourio, Joey Weimer. Who else? Drawing a blank.
Bob Gass.
Robert Gasser. Slideshow Bob. My favorite new nickname that I've coined.
This slider is very good.
Surely not stick.
A filthy pitch.
Yes, when that slider gets going, Slideshow Bob is going to be something that I tweet on the regular. So Joey Weimer, interesting that you think he's going to be the best. I think that's probably a controversial opinion, given how high people are right now. And Frelick and Garrett Mitchell has the major league experience. So tell me,
Jackson Chourio is pretty good too.
Also Jackson Chourio, who I've not even thought about yet. All right, so what makes you say that? And maybe talk about some of the observations you've had from this prospect study.
I mean, the thing that just stands out is guys that hit the ball hard and do it regularly. And I mean, for as good as Sal Frelick is, and as much of a floor as he gives you, he's not that guy.
Right.
The questions that people have with Garrett Mitchell, although the defense in center field is really good, are probably, I think they're more burning of a question than they are with Weimer, because it's more of like a whole swing conundrum. Weimer's going to strike out. He's going to swing and miss a lot, but I just think there's a path for him to still strike out, 25 to 30% of the time, which isn't actually too bad. It's more than average, but still doing a ton of damage, even in that profile. Like, there will be swing and miss, but, this guy can go from whiffing a pitch and then the very next one, similar spot, but it's, a little more in the zone, and he just does damage with all parts of the plate. He runs really, really well. He plays good defense. He's a freak athlete. Joey Weimer is going to be
okay.
Going to be the best player to come out of this system.
All right. I am going to go in a different direction on that same thought. I think Sal Frelick comes up early in the season, in May.
Ooh, in May.
And I think he gives them a jolt. I think he is what Willy Adames was a couple years ago. Not to that degree, not to that like perfect everything worked out sort of way, but I think maybe it's because of an injury, maybe it's because they realize they just need a little bit more leather in the outfield, or they find out that they just need another bat. I think Sal Frelick comes up, and I think he is a consistent hitter, and he gives the Brewers some life. This team, we're talking about, I mean, on field is obviously one thing, but this team needs some juice, and they've got some guys who could be that. They've got some new faces like Jesse Winker and William Contreras, but remember, this team really sort of fizzled for most of the 2022 season, and the fan attendance and I'd say the overall interest in the team reflected that. They need some juice, and I feel like that might be a source. Now, that's putting a lot on Frelick, who again, we thought he might break camp with this team. It's pretty clear now that that's not necessarily going to be the case. But I think when he gets his shot, he is going to take it right out of the gate. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do on the big league level. And comparing him to Garrett Mitchell will be interesting too. I think Frelick is probably the guy that you would have thought would have gotten the shot, even though Mitchell's a little bit longer tenured in the organization, but not by a ton. And they went with Mitchell, and Mitchell, he did give them a boost. I think September
there was that was one of the few lifts that you felt. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that's what happened. Yep. I think they'll do it again with Sal Frelick. I think he'll get up here and he'll make some noise, and it'll be early in the season.
I mean, if Frelick's hitting, if 1 month in he's hitting what, an 800 OPS at AAA, 850, there's nothing left for him to show
him
at that point. I mean, he mashed for 2 months down there. He mashed at AA.
Yeah.
If he's doing it after a month, there is nothing left for him to do. And I think that's a pretty good timeline. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that they missed last year, speaking of the juice, is they just didn't have guys. They didn't have upper level depth in the minors.
Totally true.
To come in and provide a spark to the roster, an upgrade from the production that they were getting. You kind of look at who ended up being the best players on the team last year, not even the best players, but like maybe the top 15 or so. The only guy that kind of snuck in there, I would say, was probably Jace Peterson.
I would agree with that. That's exactly what I was going to say.
He was probably the first guy off the bench to start the year. So there was, there just wasn't any sort of...
They got no surprises.
Yeah, no surprises that weren't expected, or you couldn't really hope for, in Aaron Ashby coming up, or Corbin Burns, or Woodruff, or you know, the thing that they've had for the last 4 or 5 years is guys coming up from AAA and producing right away. And I think they got that now.
Yeah, I would say coming into the year, Ethan Small was the only guy that you saw contributing. Yep. And he had a rough year, and it's unclear if he will be able to help the big league club at all. But, you know, he got a cup of coffee, but not much more than that. You know, he got a couple starts.
Cup of coffee, and it was not a
delicious cup of coffee. It did not go well. Yeah, it was a little chilly, but you know, obviously the book is not written on Ethan Small. He could certainly.
I wrote about him last week too.
That's right.
He might be able to work as a reliever. Might
all at jsonline.com. And if there is a spot on this team that is unclear, it's the bullpen. There are not a lot of locks, I would say. They're going to use a lot of arms.
Yeah. They've got a lot of arms.
This is the trend now anyway. Like the 60 people go through on a big league club over the course of the year. The Brewers are probably going to do that again. That's just how they've rolled the last couple years, and you certainly could see that happening again. You got another prediction for me? A third?
Yeah, I'm going to sort of close the circle on your best offensive player. It's Jesse Winker. It's going to be Jesse Winker.
Okay. Over William Contreras.
Over William Contreras. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Okay. I think some of the projection systems are not super high on Contreras.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is, you know, he's done it for what? You know, like 400 plate appearances last year, which isn't a huge sample size.
Two completely different stories, Winker and Contreras. Contreras is a guy who doesn't have track record but had an amazing year last year. Yeah. Winker has track record but a poor year last year.
So I do think there's more to the Contreras profile that's not accounted for. Like, he hits the ball hard and he hits it in the air a ton and hits it far in the air.
Yeah.
So that generally plays. But we've seen that Jesse Winker be one of the better offensive players in baseball. And if healthy, I don't see any reason why he couldn't do that again. Like, the plate discipline numbers were still there. Just hit the ball in the air and it'll work out well for him.
All right. I'll go. My last one here has to do with how they're going to handle the trade deadline next year. I think in light of the Hader trade going sideways, I do think they're going to be really aggressive this year. And maybe that's wishful thinking. I don't know. But Matt Arnold is obviously a first year. He's not a first year GM, but a first year like guy.
Head of the food chain.
Yeah. I don't. It's such a weird
word. He
runs baseball ops. I think he'll probably try to establish, you know, if the Brewers are in fact a competitive team, which we have every reason to think they will be, especially in the Central, which is not markedly better than it was last year. I think they're gonna make a real move this year, and you know they'll probably push back on what is defined as a real move, but they are going to upgrade in a significant way, and there's going to be places they can do that because the outfield is thin, the offense. I don't know if I think it's going to be a whole lot better than it was in past years. You could see them going to get a third baseman if Luis Urias struggles, or a second baseman if whatever combination, Bryce Durang or whoever else is going to be.
Luis Urias?
Luis Urias struggles. You could see them getting a first baseman because as much as we all love Rowdy Tellez, I think, you know, there is an opportunity for upgrade there if you really wanted to do it.
If you really wanted to, yeah.
We are also getting into a place in their minor league system where they have a lot of prospects to play the same position. A little bit of a redundancy.
You get a little bit into the too many cooks. Mm-hmm. You can get that.
I think they're going to have the weaponry to do it, and I think they will. Obviously, I could change my mind 40 times based on how this season plays out. You know, if they are, you know, obviously a below 500 team by the time we get into, you know, late July, probably not going to happen that way. There's no reason to think that. But
the trade deadline might look a lot different in that scenario.
That's a very different.
That's another prediction you could have about the trade.
You're right. We could also say they're going to sell all their parts and next try to compete in 2026. Yes.
I think it remains to be seen exactly how much of a, I don't want to say prospect hugger, but a prospect hugger that, you know, Arnold in the non-Stearns regime is.
Mm-hmm.
I will say I don't get the sense that it's going to be a lot different than how it has been. Like, the Brewers very much so feel that their current group of prospects is legitimate enough and good enough to carry them through the next, you know, and continue this contention window. But when the opportunity presents itself, it's very possible that it could be the off season, or not the off season, but the deadline of making more moves. For sure. Not a repeat of what happened last year if you're in first place doing a bit of a
Yeah, I think that's
unconventional sell.
It's really hard to imagine, even though I know there are a lot of people out there who are down on the Brewers front office in general and feel like maybe that they aren't willing to make those moves. But it's just I cannot fathom them getting in that same spot and doing something similar, you know, like
yeah.
either standing pat or trying to play for the future and trading a really high-level player, say a Devin Williams. I mean, to just make the analogy perfect for three younger guys, I just cannot see that happening. I just can't.
No, and the system is deep enough where I don't think they need to do that. Like,
right.
They not to litigate the Hader trade all over again, but they needed someone like Gasser at the top of the – like they just don't have –
They don't have pitching prospects.
Pitching prospects.
They still
especially
don't.
High up
right.
In the system. So – He did fill something of a need there, whereas they don't have it now. But I do think you're onto something maybe with the depth of outfielders, up the middle guys.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's where you can deal from. We'll see who's available.
Yeah.
But they showed they're willing to do it with Ruiz. You know, he's kind of the, I don't want to say odd man out, but he's probably the number five guy or so on the pecking order in outfield prospects. So
yeah. Is there anyone that we assume is going to be on the team that you think maybe could not be on the team? Like maybe just doesn't make it or gets traded late in the game here. I don't know if I know I'm throwing that question at you. I mean I don't say the easy answer, but like Eric Lauer is somebody that we've talked about as a candidate to be traded in the past because they do have a fair amount of starting depth. Lauer is obviously quite good. He's not one of their top three, but he's been very reliable for them, and you could see them moving on if it meant that they could bring somebody back to truly help them. You know, I don't know if they have I don't think that happens because I don't think they have, in their mind, a glaring need on this roster that they would do that for. But is there somebody else?
I also don't think they've been actively shopping their starting pitching depth.
Yeah.
That is the big
one. Somebody would have to come to them.
Yeah, it's one of the big bullet points of their offseason is like they don't want to get caught without starters. I mean, now if Lauer wasn't on the roster now, sure, you would have gotten something in return. But you all of a sudden be like, who's left?
Yeah. Well, they had that problem
last year. Jansen Junk is on the opening day roster then or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't remember. There was a question here.
Is there somebody on this roster that might?
Adam McKelvey had an interesting opening day roster prediction. Mike Brasso was not on it.
That would
which
just
I hadn't really considered.
Me.
He did end up having Toro and Owen Miller. Which I think they would go with Brasso over. I have Brasso over Owen Miller in my head right now.
Well, and I mean, what is this one thing this team does not do well? They don't hit left-handed pitching.
And
he does.
He hits lefties.
There's like it's the one thing you can rely on from him. So, and I shouldn't say from him. Like he's I think a reliable player. It's just if not from him, like there just aren't that many guys mashing lefties.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So, I just can't imagine that they would choose both of those guys. Abraham Toro is interesting to me. Like he's not a huge upgrade over anything they have, and I don't know for sure where he fits. Owen Miller is in the same boat with them signing Brian Anderson. I kind of felt like that was the roster spot that could go to either one of those guys, and with Brian Anderson in the fold, I don't know if that's the case. But again,
they've got depth now.
Yeah, they do have depth, and it makes me think like Mike Brasso. You know what? Maybe they do find a trade partner with Mike Brasso involved. Gosh, he's one of my favorite people on this team. He's such a cool guy to talk to.
Yeah,
it's so easy.
And like you said, he has a very clear spot.
Yes,
in your lineup every third day.
Uh huh. Every lefty, he should be your
every lefty.
Spot.
He actually hit righties really well too, which I know he would want someone to mention that. It's like I can hit righties.
He had a really good year.
He did.
He was one of the few players I would say in 2022 that I mean there are others. You know, Corbin Burns, even if he didn't match 2021, was awesome. But one of the few players I would say that exceeded what you might have expected.
We mentioned Jace Peterson earlier. We could probably put Bross in there as well.
I would. Yeah.
The thing is, he didn't. I don't know. Did he have 200 plate appearances?
I don't think so.
Play all that much.
Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't a major.
I think. I think maybe the other question, like, what is the scenario in which Sal Frelick does win that job over Garrett Mitchell? Like they're not just bringing him into camp
as a camp body.
I don't think it's super likely, based on things we've already talked about in this podcast. But it is possible. Right?
It is possible. I think if it were truly possible, we would have seen Frelick at some point last year. The fact that they went with Mitchell first was, I think, surprising, but not, you know, like it's certainly defensible or whatever. But then they never brought Frelick up for anything. That tells me that they feel like there's a pretty good gap. You know, like at least bring him up I don't remember the circumstances, but I felt like there was another injury or some at some point it still seemed like there could be room for Frelich, and it didn't happen.
The roster expanded, and they went with Ruiz because he was already on the 40-man.
That's right. That's what that was.
But the 40-man creates a bit of a conundrum there.
It does. I just feel like they made it very clear that they right now think Mitchell is
defensively, they do regard Mitchell more highly than Frelich. I think that's certain.
But Frelich is a good defender.
But Frelich can if his defense in center field is I would say either improved or like they look at him like, yeah, that's playable, that's passable. And then for whatever reason, he just tears the cover off the ball and Mitchell struggles and they decide to read into spring training results. That's the other question here is like, I just don't know what exactly it takes to move the needle there, but which is why I lean back to your May prediction as more likely. But I don't think it's completely crazy.
Well, I also think, you know, and I don't want to cast shade upon anybody. It's too early for that in the season, but like if there were an opening on this roster, I think center field is a good one because I could see Garrett Mitchell getting figured out a little bit in his second year of Major League Baseball. I could see him struggling out of the gate. Tyrone Taylor, we perpetually sleep on him, but you know, he is a guy who has over the course of his career shown flashes and stretches and never quite put anything consistent together. Maybe in April and May, he's going through one of those stretches where he's awesome and you can't keep him out of the lineup. I mean, there's a guy who could mash lefties.
He has done that, yes.
But I could see both of them struggling. And then you have an opening, and what's the obvious thing to do? Give Self Relic a shot.
Yeah.
All right, man. I think that's all.
Yeah.
Unless there's anything else.
Baseball.
Baseball. We are there.
It's upon us.
It is upon us. It's always good. A little bit less in need of those grass photos, you know, the bright green grass that you see in Arizona, like because it's been so mild in Milwaukee, I'm not.
Is there a direct correlation to like the excitement over spring training to the average
poor weather?
Yeah,
there probably is. Yes.
Yeah.
And it has been mild to say the least in Milwaukee this year, so maybe I'm not dying for it quite as much. But World Baseball Classic coming up March 7th. I think it runs to the 21st. That could be interesting. And
it's in Phoenix.
It's in Phoenix. Teams holding their breath about some of their players. Freddy Peralta was kind of politely asked to maybe not to do that.
I think it was smart in the long run.
Yeah, it's
just because of the concerns.
I don't know how you get pitchers, to be honest. I mean, I don't know how you get them to be willfully play for
Adam Wainwright is how you.
Yeah, that's how.
That's how Adam Wainwright ended up being on this roster.
Yes, it's like sure, I'll throw more innings. Why not? that'll be fun. It'll be fun to see competitive baseball, even though. You know, I'm sure teams will be holding their breath for most of that. But the Brewers, again, getting going later this week. We will try to start doing these podcasts on a semi-regular basis. I don't know if we'll be doing every week right out the gate, but we will try to catch up with Todd Rosiak. He is going to be in Phoenix again, and we will see what we can do here on a semi-regular, if not regular, basis going forward. Best thing you can do is subscribe to this podcast in Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get them. You can find us. You can find him on Twitter. He's at Kurt Hoag. That's CYRTHOGG.
That's right.
And I'm a J.R. Radcliffe. It's spelled like it sounds, except there's an E on the end of Radcliffe. Like, you know, the wizard, the guy who plays the wizard, the Harry Potter guy. Yeah, Radcliffe. Drew a blank for a second, but you know who I meant, right? Thanks for tuning into Microbrew. Lost Kurt at the very end. Thanks for listening. We'll be catching up with you very soon. Bye, everybody.